welcome to the podcast that takes a light-hearted look at lesser-known London stories with your own personal blue badge professional tourist guides.
She's Fiona.
And she's Alex.
And this is the Ladies Who London podcast. Hello, gang. It's Wednesday. How are you doing, Fiona?
I'm good.
Hooray!
Yay. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm a little bit tired. Oh, my goodness. I'm sorry. I'm going to yawn into the microphone. Sorry, everyone. Apologies.
This is a nice, soothing, soporific podcast for you this week.
Just curl up nice and quiet. And we're going to tell you a story of desperation and blood and guts. Enjoy. Happy
Lovely.
Sleeps. what have you been up to?
Went away Easter.
You did. You went sheep spotting in Wales.
Yes. Yes.
I got a photo of sheep. I was very happy.
It was quite long. I was surprised actually how big the lambs are because it's early for Easter and yet they were starting to look quite tasty. And there is a point when lambs are very cute, and very soon after that, I start eyeing up their back legs and going, "Oh, they're looking plump."
Vegans unite.
And plump at the same time.
March on Fiona. Cute and plump. I know, I remember once many moons ago going to Finland and I loved the reindeers. And I took a photo of me with a reindeer and I put it on Facebook back in the day when I used to use it and put reindeer. This reindeer was something like, "Reindeer, they're both cute and delicious." And I got so much stick for it. So much stick. But it was very sweet, but very cute.
Well, I am genuinely now doing that thing of eating meat less often, but nicer meat.
Mm.
So
I'm kind of pretty much veggie now, mostly. Mm. Yeah. Anyway, enough of our eating habits.
Yes.
Have you got any shout outs this week? I definitely have some.
Go for it.
Okay. So, firstly, I want to say a massive hello to a couple of listeners who've been on tours with me lately. Ken Grant, who came over last week. I'm trying to think now. Time has no meaning anymore. Yeah, it was last week. And it was just me and Ken for the day. And he did a whole day with me, which I haven't done a full day of guiding in a very long time. But it was really lovely. And we were doing a bit sort of London through a lens. So he brought his camera. I meant to bring my camera and forgot it, obviously. So we basically went round. Well, we did the Westminster Abbey and the Tower of London and a couple of other bits and pieces. And I was sort of planning to do so much more, but we ended up being in the Abbey for 3.5 hours, just like looking at it and taking photos and being creative. And it was, at the time, just went. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
But we had a great time and Ken was so, so lovely. And we had some lovely chats and, it was great. And dealt with a couple of really heavy downpours as well. Thank you, Ken, so much. And he said he listens all the time and he thinks I'm very funny. So he's now my favourite listener. Thank you, Ken.
Yay.
And then I also did a tour with the lovely Dana Grieger from the US as well, who travelled with me, we think it was about 2 years ago now. Mm-hmm. So her and her husband and her lovely daughter, Charlotte, who'd grown up so much in that time. And we did a blood and guts and crime and punishment tour around the city of London. And it was a lot of fun. And again, really lovely to see them again and catch up and just have a lovely couple of hours wandering around in the gloom. Looking at exciting bits of London. And yeah, we did some ghost stories. We did some body snatching. It was funny because when we were planning the tour, Dana had said, "Right, I've put the options to Charlotte." She's gone, ooh, blood and guts, crime and punishment. Yeah. Yes, please. And then when we got there, we were talking body snatching and she was going, no. Bless her. So I think it was a bit quite full on, bless her. But it was, really fun.
How old was she? Is she?
Oh my goodness. I think she's about 9, have I got that right, Dana? You let me know. I think around there.
Yeah.
Just gorgeous, gorgeous girl. Loved her so much. So thank you all for coming on my lovely my tours with me. It was so nice to see everyone. Ahead of Ken's tour, he'd emailed and said, "Right, let me know which episodes I need to re-listen to ahead of the tour." So I got him re-listen to the Koh-i-Noor. We saw the Koh-i-Noor in the Crown Jewels. I got him to listen to Angela Burdett Coutts, who went to visit her, and a couple of others. So it was really nice to kind of be like, "Oh, and all of that is here," which is really cool. So, yeah. And then last week we talked about the livery companies, and I did say at one point, if you want the joke that I came up with off the top of my head that was a bit not suitable for work, email me. Someone did. Terry Yay. Moriarty emailed me, who Terry's been in touch before, and she's like, go on, give me the joke. So I emailed that back to him today, which I genuinely didn't expect anyone to message, but and it came in and I was like, what was that? My slightly dodgy joke. Anyway, hope you enjoyed it, Terry. Very silly.
You are spreading joy and happiness wherever you go.
Is that it? Is that it? Either that or desperation, one of the two.
But fabulous if you'd done fun guiding, because, you know, that's good. That's
I don't do huge amounts of it at the moment for obvious reasons, and it was so lovely to.
No, that's what I was thinking. That made it sound like guiding isn't fun. That's not what I was aiming at. Alex hasn't done that much of it.
I make it very unfun, yeah. Today we're going to talk about enclosures and 17th century farming practices. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk. Yeah, one of those.
What's wrong with that?
Well, of course. Your 6-hour lecture on Christopher Wren. But yeah, no, it was so lovely to kind of get out and just, and I, like I say, I'm not guiding that much, so I am being very choosy about the jobs I do. And I will always, always, where I can, make space for some lovely podcast listeners.
Yay! Too right.
Right, well, anything else before we trudge on into this week's
I suspect there's things that I've forgotten about, but they have all just completely escaped me, if there are. Oh, so, no.
Okay. Well, there we go. We did ask last week if you would like to see the podcast pedestal come back, and then completely forgot to put up a poll. So it.
Oh no! I remembered regularly that I should be putting up the poll. It's just on none of those occasions was it the thing that was the top of my list. So unfortunately, fortunately, it has gone up. Sheep.
It has gone up. It has gone up. We have one vote, which is in favour, and that was my vote. Okay. But actually, my friend Gio, who does listen to the podcast and was one of the people who a while ago went, bring it back, has already messaged to say, I want it back. So that's two votes for yes.
Yes, and someone else.
So, oh, really?
Yep, there was another.
I mean, it went up like 5 minutes ago, gang. So,
but from last week, someone who just said it randomly before ahead of the poll.
So we're 100% at the moment.
So unless you really hate it, don't, you know.
It's happening. Amazing.
But yeah, there is now a story and a poll on Instagram, and I will it'll be joined by something on Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah. By the time you listen to this, the story might have run. No, it'll still be live.
Yes, it will. Yeah. Fabulous. Well, it depends when you listen. But anyway, whatever. Yep. Right, so this week, it's me. Yay. I haven't done one for a while. This is fun. And in true Ladies Who London podcast form, we're a little bit behind the date that we wanted to do this on. we're doing a little bit of planning this year. Fiona and I put down some kind of important dates in the year and this, that and the other. And one of the dates that came up, which just so happened this year to fall on Easter Sunday, was the Trans Visibility Day, which was on the 31st of March. And we thought it'd be really fun to do somebody from, well, potentially the trans community. You'll see why I say potentially when we get to the story. And because we were both a bit overwhelmed with stuff, we managed to do it a week late. So never mind. Here it is. We are talking about a character that I've had on my list probably since the start of the podcast, actually, who I've just never quite got round to, who is the Chevalier Dion. It's spelt D'Eon. So you can...
Dion.
You can call it, we can say, I don't know, Dion or whatever, I don't know, but Chevalier Dion. And this is the story of I'm going to refer to the Chevalier as they, because they lived as both a man and a woman at varying times in their life. And it's always tricky. We've spoken about this a little bit before, in that, you know, a lot of the labels and titles that we put on a variety of people, including people in the LGBTQ plus community now, they're modern labels, and people can kind of go, yes, this is what I am. You can kind of self-identify and say, yes, I am trans, I am bi, I'm a whatever.
Yeah.
Back in the day, people just sort of, if they felt they were able to, did what they wanted to do. And didn't necessarily write stuff down to say, this is what I was feeling, this is what I was thinking. So yeah. It's quite hard to put a definitive label on somebody and say they were trans or whatever, because we just don't know. And this is exactly a case of that story. So this is why I said earlier, possibly a story of someone who was trans. But we are going back to start the Chevalier's story to 1728, if you'll cast your minds back. In France.
I remember
it
well.
Yes, like it was yesterday. To the sunny streets.
Can I just say? I mean, I wouldn't normally butt in with this, but you did set it up. It's just a mere 5 years after the death of Christopher Wren.
Oh my good God! And that's the podcast for this week, gang. Thank you all for coming. I feel like, you know how when someone's having an argument online, if somebody mentions Hitler, the argument is over, right?
Yeah.
I feel like in this podcast, if ever you mention Christopher Wren, that's it. We just shut it down.
You started it. You started it with the 6-hour lecture.
Because I knew that's what you would go for. Anyway. If you can't win an argument, just invoke Christopher Wren.
Yeah. 1728 in France.
1728, 5 years after the death of Christopher Wren. 5 years? 10 years? What did you say? I don't know. Wasn't listening.
Something like that.
So 1728 in, not quite in Gay Paris, but nearby, just not far away in a town called Tonnerre. And you're going to get all of my French pronunciation in this podcast because it takes place a lot in France.
Yeah.
Now, the Chevalier Dion lived, as I mentioned, openly as both a man and a woman in both France and in England at different stages of their life, and was somebody who was incredibly charismatic and became someone who was very much a source of public intrigue and fascination, with images swirling around, you know, printed images that would be, well, printed and sold and whatever. And so there's lots of conflicting information and hearsay surrounding their story. So what I'm going to give you today is as close to what I believe is the fact as possible, but take it with a little bit of a pinch of salt. We can't be 100% accurate. We have to do a little bit of reading between the lines. And there is an autobiography involved, a never published one, I should say, which some people also say might be wildly kind of embellished. So, mm-hmm. Wouldn't take this with a pinch of salt, but let's go back to the beginning. In October of 1728, a child is born, Charles Geneviève Louis Auguste André Timothée Déon de Beaumont.
Say that
after a couple
of
glasses of wine. Now, there is no chevalier at this point, because chevalier is basically the French word for knight, so that comes later.
Mm-hmm.
So this is why we refer to this person as Déon, because it's probably the easiest of all the names to go with.
Yeah.
The family was minor aristocracy, mm-hmm. which feels like a sort of damning with faint praise, isn't it? All the other way around. You're an aristocrat, but only minor. Yeah. And Déon went to law school, was, by all accounts, a brilliant student, mm-hmm. graduated law school and became a political writer, and was also a very big advocate for reform, social reform in particular, and financial reform as well, but a lot of social reform. So there's a lot of forward thinking going on there.
Yeah.
We're talking, you know, early 1700s. There's a lot of stuff happening in Europe in the 1700s, she says, gesturing vaguely at history.
Yes. I was just thinking, so what was going on in France back then? And it's shocking how I mix up my French eras. So,
yeah. It always reminds me of that quote from the History Boys where they say, history's just one effing thing after another, mm-hmm. which is completely true. And this is very much this story. It's just one flipping thing after another. So in the 1720s or probably 1740s, 30s, 40s, by the time Déon is kind of going through university and stuff, you know, there's political rumblings. There's all sorts of stuff going on. We'll come back to a little bit of the French history in a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But Déon was taken on as a spy and a diplomat uh-huh. for King Louis XV of France.
Right.
And put into a sort of a group called, what I love about these things is sometimes you get secret societies that are called something like the super secret society that you mustn't know about. Oosh. And he joins this group called Le Secret du Roi, the King's Secret. It's like, aww. I mean, come on, gang. Be more clever. Anyway, he's apparently a very, very good spy. And when at the end of the 7 Years' War, famously not 7 years long, years long, Dion is sent as part of a team from the French embassy to London to negotiate the Treaty of Paris, mm-hmm. which basically ends the 7 Years' War. Now, I'm not an expert on the 7 Years' War, so I did a little bit of looking up about them, all the machinations, and this is my two-line whip of the summation of the war. France, Austria, Saxony, Sweden, and Russia on one side, Prussia, right. Hanover, and Great Britain on the other. The Great Britain, Prussia, Hanover are on the winning side, and in the Treaty of Paris, which takes place in 1763, this is where Britain is given, as part of the kind of settlement, huge amounts of land in North America, including all of the French territory east of the Mississippi River, as well as Florida. Uh-huh. So all of that, uh-huh. you know, Nouvelle Orleans, New Orleans and stuff yep. like that, or Narlands, if you want to be wildly inaccurate about the pronunciation. All of that stuff becomes British, basically. So you've got that. So you've got all those sort of French influences down there. Now, so he's brought over as part of this delegation, if you like, to sort this treaty out. And he's kind of coming in going, oh, hello, yes, mending relations, yes, aren't we friends? Lovely, lovely. And actually, realistically, he's still spying for the king.
Right.
Which, you know, fair enough. I mean, yes. Why would you send a spy to go and do a diplomat's job if they're not going to spy? So fair enough, he's spying. Now, whilst the French are over here doing all of the nicey-nicey and let's make friends stuff, one of the roles of the spies who'd come over was to glean information to help the king to strategize an invasion. The French hadn't taken the loss very well. the king wanted revenge, basically. And okay. So
invading us?
Invading Britain.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
All kind of gonna go, all fine, all good. And I don't really know too much, but maybe when they're going, yeah, off you go to America and sort all that out. And then when we're busy over there, come in and go, way. Anyway, so at the moment, at this point, the Chevalier Dion has been knighted by now, so is now Chevalier, mm-hmm. and is living as a man. Mm-hmm. And is awarded the Cross of Saint-Louis, which is an award given for bravery in battle, mm-hmm. and also for services as a spy. And then, so at this point in time, he's been over in the UK for quite some time, and he's known very much in court circles, political circles, but not really by the public.
Right.
And then something changes. The Chevalier is recalled to Paris, and they refuse to go.
Ooh.
And what they do is they say, I'm actually going to stay in London and I am going to seek political exile here.
Ooh.
Now, why is the Chevalier seeking political exile? Well, they've got this huge hot secret of this planned invasion.
Yeah.
And they've got some good stuff to blackmail and manipulate the king with. Uh-huh. So this causes a huge scandal, and Paris, the King Louis is just, you know, writes him off and is like, oh no, this is terrible. But then what the Chevalier Dion does is to publish a dossier of diplomatic documents, and these are documents, correspondence between the king, his spies, and a lot of all the ministerial stuff that's going on. So it shows the corruption that's going on.
Uh-huh.
And the Chevalier also says, I'm going to release the secret information about these invasion plans that you sent us over here to kind of gather information and put together.
Yeah.
And this causes a huge scandal.
Mm-hmm.
And what it does is it makes the Chevalier Dion a huge celebrity in London. So they go from being part of this, you know, political and social, political and courtly life to real social celebrity.
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone wants a piece of Dion. They want to know everything about them. And, you know, it's the headline of the day, really.
Yeah.
Now, in 1764, there's a print made which is now in the British Museum, and it shows the Chevalier presenting as a man. They've got quite a large sort of round face, very large eyes, and I mean, it's hard to know how accurate these are, because if you look at, there are swathes of prints, etchings, prints, paintings, all sorts done of the Chevalier d'Eon. Some are satirical, some are not. And it's really hard to know exactly what they look like because they're all quite different.
Is that, is it the one in the hat? Is it a tricorn hat? And the one that you're thinking about? Yes.
Exactly. Yes. Tricorn hat. It's, I wouldn't say it's the most flattering portrait.
No.
And again, we'll pop these on the blog so you can go and have a little look on the blog. And we'll there's a few that we're going to talk about that we'll pop up there. And rumours start to circulate in both Britain and France that, the Chevalier is actually a woman. Now, there's a few reasons for this. It's said that the Chevalier had attended cross-dressing balls in Russia while they were there as a diplomat in previous years, you know, long before they'd come to London. And there had been rumblings for quite some time about, in France, about the gender of the Chevalier d'Eon.
Mm-hmm.
Now, stuff starts to get a bit weird here. Bookies start taking bets on the Chevalier's gender. There's even a wager that takes place at the London Stock Exchange about their true gender as well. And there are some reports, although again, we don't quite know how accurate these are and might even have been made up by d'Eon themselves, that d'Eon would challenge anyone to a duel that had bet on their gender.
Right.
So now, whether or not this is true and whether or not they actually did that, or whether it was a way of, I don't know, shoring up, sort of giving people more to talk about and kind of making yourself into a figure of, you know, don't mess, or equally, you know, if they were a woman or were intending to live as a woman, that bring a little bit of that kind of soldier masculinity into it. I don't know. There's a lot of potentials here.
Yeah. Or like if sort of paving the way to come out as a woman in a way by creating speculation ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe. Absolutely. And so if we fast forward a couple of years, 1774, the King Louis XV dies. And Louis the the 16th takes over. numbers, bane of my life. So Louis the 16th takes over and decides to open up negotiations with d'Eon again. The king says, come back to Paris. Let's have a chat. Let's figure this all out, me old macker. Probably not quite in the same way. And 1775, the Chevalier goes back to Paris and the French king offers a pension to them when they arrive in Paris, when they return in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there is then a term. Now, this is where things get very, very murky and unclear. And again, there are possibly several reasons for this. It is said that one of the terms of this pension will be told to you after this little break. One of the terms of this pension is that d'Eon has to dress as a woman from that point on. And there's a word in this supposed term that it says they have to re-adopt the style of dressing as a woman, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Because there's a suggestion there that there'd been a woman all along, or at least had preferred to dress as such. Definitely, you know, something, sort of a suggestion that had been something that had happened in the past.
Yeah.
Hang
on, let me backtrack. The conditions are given to Chevalier.
Yes.
Yes. So yes. She hasn't written this. It's been negotiated.
It's been, well, again, this is where what we're not sure. We don't know if it's the king imposing this, and if it is it an attempt to try and undermine the Chevalier d'Eon? Is it an attempt to there'd been rumors of female sexuality, maybe it was an attempt to kind of
sort of call his bluff,
or possibly it may have just been a choice from the Chevalier to live that way. It's very unclear, so we don't even know if that term is necessarily was part of the pension, but that's the story that comes with it.
Yeah.
So treat that with a pinch of salt, but equally there might be some truth in there.
Mm-hmm.
But what we do know is that from that point on, the Chevalier presents permanently as a woman. And mm-hmm. even long after the monarch is gone in France, they continue to dress as a woman as well.
Okay.
So there's a definitely an element of, you know, if it hadn't been a choice, once the monarch's gone, then you do what you want.
You might stop.
Yeah. And if doing what you want is staying dressing as a woman, great. But if it's not, then that would probably indicate more that it was that dressing as a woman was less of choice. Their choice and more of the king's choice.
Yes.
Anyway, yeah. Like I say, murky. Do we know,
does the pension carry on after the king dies?
Nope.
Okay. Absolutely so there's no.
Not.
Yeah.
Now, and I wonder if you can figure out why the pension stops when the king dies.
Is it because the entire French state? Changes.
Yeah, it's the French Revolution. Yeah. So if your historical dates brain is twitching in relation to all of these dates and France, you are not wrong because the French Revolution is about to pick up. 1789 to mm-hmm. 99, if we're being picky. But 1789 is usually given as the date that's important for the start of the French Revolution. Now, of course, is going to affect our Chevalier, who's still over in London. So basically, once that... that pension happens in 1775.
Yeah.
And the Chevalier returns in Paris. Yeah, back in Paris. But the Chevalier returns in 1785. So this is before the French Revolution.
Yep.
But obviously they've just gone, I'm just going to go back to London. Quite like it there.
Yeah.
We don't have any particular information about why they came back. It doesn't seem that they were sent or called back.
Mm-hmm.
They must just have gone, that's... I'm off there. I'm going.
So not in an official role this time?
No, very much not. Well, not...
As far as we know.
Yeah. So returning to London in 1785 and living permanently as a woman from this point on as well. And they're hanging out with aristocracy and royalty, but again, still very much the talk of the town. Very excitable for everyone
still
in London.
Absolutely with the same name, like openly the same absolutely. Person as it were. Yes,
yeah, Chevalier Dion.
Clarifying.
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah. So when the revolution starts, their French pension is stopped and money becomes an issue. Now, of course, we know that it doesn't end well for Louis XVI. Mm. We'll come back to that. But one great option for the Chevalier was to give fencing exhibitions in London.
Mm-hmm.
And this was done in women's dress.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Now, you can imagine that this is going to be quite an exciting thing for people to see.
It's going to cause a stir. Yep.
And there are also prints of the Chevalier giving fencing demonstrations in women's dress as well.
Yeah.
Which we, again, will pop on the blog and you can have a little look. And it sort of solidifies their popularity, celebrity status, if you like. And it's a way of getting money because, of course, you know, money has become an issue now that the pension has stopped. Now, there's even a court trial which goes on declaring Dion to be a woman. And I didn't find out too much information about it. I've only seen it mentioned in one or two places, so I can't tell mm-hmm. who it was between. From what it seemed to me is that Dion wasn't even involved in the court case.
Okay.
Or court trial. It was just a load of people getting a bit het up about things. Yep. But there was a really big romantic stereotype. And we have mentioned this before in a couple of episodes of women dressing as a man to join the army and find their sweetheart.
Yeah.
So people kind of love this and buy into it a little bit and crucially accept it as well.
Yeah.
It's quite a regular narrative and they sort of go, this is lovely. And you know, all that kind of thing. And with all of this, there is a little bit of evidence that maybe the sort of gender identity and sexual politics that, you know, we think of for the late Georgian, well, literally and metaphorically.
Apart from one about...
matron, wink, wink, nudge. But yes, the Georgian era, you know, it was very much, it was all out there. There was no... they were quite open-minded. There was a lot of stuff going on. And we think, maybe we think about the Victorians as being very stuffy.
It does seem like the Victorians kind of straight-laced everything.
Yeah.
And
also, I think there's that thing, isn't there, of thinking that people in the past...
were not as exciting as us.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's the way that, you know, young people think about their parents as, don't talk about this. Oh. It's like, you realise your parents have been there and done that, right? You realise they've done that. Okay, anyway. I think they were a lot more open with... things that we don't give them credit for necessarily. And this is long, long, long before modern conversations around LGBTQ plus communities. And again, like I say, no labels, but there's definitely an acceptance and maybe an interest. I don't know. But it does happen. There's also quite a lot of, if you think about it, quite a lot of gender fluid experimentation, particularly in the realm of fashion.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I was just thinking that sort of men's fashion back then was much more ornate, or certainly court dress.
Absolutely.
And in a way, I mean, different shapes, clothes and things, but much, much less distinction in a way between men and women's decoration.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, you also have, as well as not just court dress, but you've got things like the macaronis, who were unbelievably over the top, like enormous wigs and hugely flamboyant. And and actually, they were described at one point in some publication as neither male nor female, a thing of the neuter gender, which is quite interesting.
Yeah.
And I mentioned earlier that Russia had loads of cross-dressing balls. It wasn't a one-off thing. It was a thing that they often did. And apparently the, the Empress, they said that she was the best or most elegant man there or something. Anyway.
No.
So there's quite a lot of, you know, all this sort of stuff going on.
Yeah.
Which I find quite fascinating, really.
Yeah.
Now, there's a few people at the time who could use this and use the Chevalier's presence and, you know, aura and everything. Such as there's a few feminists like Mary Wollstonecraft. And she used the Chevalier as a figurehead of, in quotes, female fortitude. One of the things that she did was said that, Look at Déon, who is a woman. This is what women are capable of. If we have the same opportunities as men, this is what we can achieve. So that was quite a handy, you know, thing for bolster the feminist movement. It's quite interesting.
Presumably, there aren't in France. There aren't female chevaliers. Do we know that?
I mean, well, there must be chevaliers. But I don't know. I don't honestly know. There probably is now. Whether or not there was back then, probably would have been the same in the UK, which would have been wife of.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem that Chevalier ever referred to themselves as Chevalier, at least not that I can find. I may be wrong about that. But they do refer to themselves later on as Mademoiselle. That's quite interesting. One of the things that we've spoken about quite a lot, actually, in a few different podcasts, one way of getting information out there of the way that certain people became celebrities and also figures of fun and things like that was printing.
Yeah.
Lots and lots of print reproduction. I mean, we spoke about this with Kitty Fisher. Her prints were hugely popular, almost like kind of pin-up prints. They always remind me of things like, you know, when we were school where you had those like hang tough kiddie posters, you know, the ones with the kitty that hanging from the tree that said hang tough, or you know, the Athena man or like the tennis player scratching her ass, that kind of thing.
The one
that everybody had on their wall.
Yes.
So this would, it would have been that kind of vibe, you know, Kitty Fisher, Chevalier Dion, all these these people. You'd had all these prints. And there's a lot of satirical prints knocking around, particularly of the Chevalier Dion. Because some people, obviously, there's always going to be a faction who can't make head nor tail of something like that.
And then, exactly.
But there do start to be accurate prints of the Chevalier as a woman. There's some fantastic portraits of them as a middle-aged woman. In fact, the particular one that I love is quite the famous one from the National Portrait Gallery. They're middle-aged, wearing a cap and a gown. The cross of Saint Louis that I mentioned earlier is very, very prominent on the sort of near shoulder. And there's also in their hair, they're wearing the cocarde, which was the symbol of the French Revolution. And this is something that the Chevalier was very supportive of the revolution, and even wrote to the French Assembly, the new French Assembly, crucially, offering to lead an army of, and I quote, Amazonian women against France's enemies. But the Chevalier's support for the regime dropped off when they executed the royal family a few years later.
Right.
So I mentioned that Louis XVI was later executed.
Yep.
I think it was 1793, something like that. So a few years, 5 years after the start of
I hadn't realised it was that long afterwards.
Yeah, it's. I mean, the revolution kind of goes on for about 10 years, but yeah, they're not because there was a bit of back and forth even amongst the ranks of about do we execute, do we not, what do we do, all that kind of thing. Yeah. Anyway, so that's when the Chevalier was like, yeah, I'm not really in for that. And in later life, the Chevalier lived with a widowed friend, Mrs. Cole, in Holborn, in a street called Millman Street, which I don't know if that still exists or not. And again, in every report that I found, they are living as friends.
Yeah.
Now,
yes.
Is that friends? Is that lovers? Is that what's the one that biographers always refer to? Two gay women living together as, you know, like
companions,
yeah, lifelong companions. So I mean, we don't know. Everyone I've said every report I've seen has said a widowed friend or a friend, but I mean, I'm just speculating here. There could be more to that or not. We don't know. But it was a very modest living arrangement, and all of that fame and popularity, which spent, you know, the Chevalier spent most of their life pretty darn famous, especially for the 1700s. Didn't really do much for them. They spent a goodly stint in debtor's prison. And in 1805, received an advance from a publisher for their memoirs. And the memoirs were written but never published. And they died in 1810 at the age of 81 in poverty.
Okay.
So, and let this be a lesson, gang. Celebrity doesn't always pay.
No. Mm. I mean, the issue of prisons and trans people now being what it is. Do we know in the debtor's prison, presumably?
I don't know, actually. Ladies, I have no idea. Were debtor's prisons? I feel like debtor's prisons weren't quite
maybe
so segregated.
Not as segregated, maybe they're.
Because a lot of them had families living with them and things like that, didn't they? So I wonder if it was just a bit of a free for all, really. So I honestly don't know too much about the conditions of being imprisoned. As I mentioned, they wrote an autobiography, and in it they claim to have been born female but raised male, in quotes, by a father desperate for a son.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I mentioned at the top that that a lot of people suggested that their autobiography was a bit of a work of fantasy as well. So again, we can't really take everything that we read as fact. What we do know is that after their death, Dion's gender was proclaimed to be male. Stories that male genitalia was present, I don't know if that's true or if they just sort of decided that Chevalier was male. I don't know. I but that's what was written down.
Yeah.
And they're buried in St. Pancras Old Church, interestingly.
Okay. Yeah. So, I think now, the street, the Holborn Street you mentioned, is still there, I think.
Is it?
Just near what's it called, Coram's Field.
Oh, okay.
Not far from Doughty Street.
Oh, nice. Well, right in the thick of it then.
Yeah.
So would have overlapped slightly.
That's what you think. Would he overlap with Dickens?
Yeah.
But maybe Dickens didn't get there at the beginning of his life, so maybe
no, he wouldn't.
There,
would he? Yeah. So probably.
But talking of debtors' prisons and things,
and that area and all that. There are two ways that we know a bit about Chevalier. One is from their book, and one is from a book written in 1910, so actually a whole century after the Chevalier died, which was written by Bram Stoker of Dracula fame.
Dracula.
Bram Stoker wrote a book called Famous Imposters and included the Chevalier in that book. So again, I kind of think if you're writing it 100 years out, you are only going on the other stuff that you've gleaned, that you found out. Unless you're doing a deep dive historical biography, chances are you're buying into the same kind of myths and legends as before. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
So there is discussion amongst experts about whether Dion was trans or whether they switched gender as a strategy, which, as you can see, strategically might have played very, very well.
Yeah.
We may never know. But that's the story of the Chevalier Dion.
Well. It another one that provokes more questions than that. But just also, like you say, it's good to be aware of that things aren't always as clear cut, and going back into history doesn't make it any more clear cut.
Absolutely not. And I used to, I mentioned that they were born in a town called Tonnerre. Uh-huh. And I had the name Tonnerre in my head. And I was trying to figure out why. And I remember that when I used to run wine tours around the world, which I did.
Oh, yeah.
Hashtag humble brag. I went to...
Was it a around the world wine tour?
You know, I did some amazing ones. I went to New Zealand, Australia on wine tours. I went to all over France and Spain and you know, would kind of... Oh, it was fantastic. I absolutely loved it. And champagne, obviously, which, you know, was my stomping ground before. Mm-hmm. But I was trying to think, why do I know the name Tonnerre? Because it's a small town, really, near Bourgogne. Mm-hmm. And it's part of the Chablis region. And we used to go to a winery there, which was a wonderful winery. And I wish I could remember what the name of the winery was. But on their glasses, they had, and I still have some of their glasses because I bought some, a picture of the Chevalier Dion on them. And I remember going there and I was like, tell me about
this story.
And they were like, oh, it's a Chevalier Dion. And I was like, okay. And they sort of assumed I knew who that was. And at the time I was like, I've no idea. But yeah, so and I always wanted to kind of find out a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
So there we go.
Absolutely. Very good. Yes. Sorry, I don't know what that was going to be. I was looking for the portrait at the same time. Since we're in 24 portraits at the National Portrait Gallery.
Hmm.
I was
not
just
all on show, I don't think, though, right?
No, probably not on show. But it'd be interesting to know who commissioned them, or like at the point when, if you're in debtor's prison, you can't necessarily afford a portrait, but someone has.
Yeah, but done portraits would have been done before then.
Before, yeah.
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 And again, we're talking portraits, but we're also talking about, you know, being done as prints. So they may not have even been portraits that the Chevalier sat for. Who knows?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So there we go. So you can see NPG, National Portrait Gallery, British Museum, whether or not they're on show at the British Museum, I do not know.
Mm-hmm.
And take a little trip to Millman Street next time you're in Holborn.
Yeah.
Oh, there we go.
Very good. That's it. Fascinating. Thank you.
Pleasure, Troj. Right. Before we go, have you got anything, any parish notices you need to...
I haven't thought of anything.
Have you not got any tours coming up?
Well, it's the last...
Nudge.
I'm doing the last... Brain like a sieve. the last of the underground tours that I do that is a turn up and go tour, as it were, with London Walks. We don't run it in the summer because it just gets too warm.
Sweaty.
So if anybody fancies that... That is Tuesday morning. So the 16th of April is the last one I'm doing, but they do run to the end of April. So have a look at walks.com.
Fabulous. And I'm going to do a little bit of a promo on behalf of our erstwhile podcast host, Emily Dell.
Yes, I saw
because
her.
She's launching some sketch history tours with her company,
Artspoken.
I'm not sure if it's Artspoken, isn't it now? She's changed around a bit. The first one is on April the 26th at 8 p.m. What it looks like is a free online taster session, and she's going to do
the V&A.
The V&A, but that's an online one, and then she's going to be doing some in-person ones. And if you join her online session, you'll get 20% off your first outside sketch history tour. Send her your name and email address, and I think the aim is that you're kind of going to find out stuff, but also sketch and do some lovely kind of general arty things. It does sound lovely. I might go, actually.
Yeah. She's going to tell you stuff and then take a moment you can all enjoy. And she's got art materials and things, so not so much the online one. I'm guessing that's what you've got in your house. But after that, she'll have lovely materials for you to use.
Yeah. So, exciting.
Yeah.
So go give Emily some love. I was also asked a little while ago, am I going to be running any public tours this summer? It's already April. How has that happened? I was asked about street art tours. And yeah, I probably will. I need to get my bum into gear before the summer is completely gone. But yes, in theory, I will do something at some point. So watch this space I am off tomorrow to give a street art walk to a group of French students, so that should be fun. But I'll do some public ones, I'm sure, at some point. I want to resurrect my harlots and do a few in the summer, so let's see how we go. And there might be a doglet on that one, although he was a hell beast today, so I might decide not to bring the hell beast on at all. We'll see. Who can tell?
Apart from today, how's he settling in?
Mostly okay. Mm-hmm. We went to my workspace today, the second time he's been there, and it was a lot busier this time, and he just wouldn't settle, and he chewed absolutely everything, including my lovely deskmate's jacket. Oh. And then he went and barked in the face of some people who were eating food. No. Because he's a feral beast around food. And then he chewed all the way through his lead. And then I thought, right, I'm slightly stressed with all this, so we went home.
Coming home.
Yes. Coming home with a lead that had been chewed in half. That was not fun.
Yeah.
And then we got home at about 2:30. The flipping thing just conked out, straight out on the sofa. Straight out. Yeah. 4 hours he was out. I had to drag him out to go for a wee.
After all that excitement.
I know. Hell beast. I'm sure it'll get better, but it might get worse before it gets better. So send me support, everybody. There we go. Right. Well, that's us for this week. Let's naff off, because I've got to edit this and get this up posted.
Yeah.
In time for the Wednesday podcast.
In time to put it out before the poll finishes. So vote on the podcast poll. But exactly. Podcast pedestal poll, please.
Just give it a yes and we're good. We'll go home.
Yeah. Right. Have a fabulous week.
Have a fabulous week yourself.
Fabulous.
Fabulous. Put your teeth back in, girl. Right. See you next week, gang.
Bye.
Bye.